America's history is largely the story of our efforts to honor our founders' charge to form a more perfect union. In calmer times, our country has been well served by our two-party system, with progressives and conservatives debating what to change and what to preserve. But when change is forced upon us by events, we are all tested and thrown back to our fundamental mission: to widen the circle of opportunity, deepen the meaning of freedom, strengthen the bonds of our community. To me, that is what it means to make our union more perfect. At every critical turning point, we have chosen union over division. In the early days of the Republic, by building a national economic and legal system. In the Civil War, by preserving the Union and ending slavery. In the early 20th century, as we moved from an agricultural to an industrial society, by making our government stronger to preserve competition, promote basic safeguards for labor, provide for the poor, the elderly, and the infirm, and protect our natural resources from plunder. And in the 1960s and 1970s, by advancing civil rights and women's rights. In each instance, while we were engaged in the struggle to define, defend, and expand our union, powerful conservative forces resisted, and as long as the outcome was in doubt, the political and personal conflicts were intense. In 1993, when I took office, we were facing another historic challenge to the union as we moved from the industrial age into the global information age. The American people were faced with big changes in the way they lived and worked, and big questions to be answered. Would we choose global economic engagement or economic nationalism? Would we use our unrivaled military, political, and economic power to spread the benefits and confront the emerging threats of the interdependent world, or become a fortress America, acting on our own? Would we abandon our industrial age government with its commitments to equal opportunity and social justice, or reform it to give people the tools to succeed in the new era? Would our increasing racial and religious diversity fracture or strengthen our national community? As president, I tried to answer these questions in a way that kept moving us toward a more perfect union, lifting people's vision and bringing them together to build a new vital center for American politics in the 21st century. 2/3 of the citizens supported my general approach, but on the cultural questions and always appealing tax cuts, the electorate was more closely divided. With the outcome in doubt, the bitter partisan and personal attacks raged, bearing a striking resemblance to those of the early Republic. Whether my historical analysis is right or not, I judge my presidency more in terms of its impact on people's lives. That is how I kept score. All the millions of people with new jobs, new homes, and college aid. The kids with health insurance and after-school programs. The people who left welfare for work. The families helped by the family leave law. The people living in safer neighborhoods. All those people have stories, and they're better ones now. Life got better for all Americans because the air and water were cleaner and more of our natural heritage was preserved. And we brought more hope for peace, freedom, security, and prosperity to people all over the world. They have their stories, too. When I became president, America was sailing into uncharted waters, into a world full of apparently disconnected positive and negative forces. Because I had spent a lifetime trying to bring together my own parallel lives, had been raised to value all people, and as governor had seen both the bright and dark sides of globalization, I felt I understood where my country was and how we needed to move into the new century. I knew how to put things together and how hard it was to do. On September the 11th, things seemed to fall apart again, as Al-Qaeda used the forces of interdependence, open borders, easy immigration and travel, easy access to information and technology, to murder 3,100 people from 70 nations in New York, Washington, and Pennsylvania. The world rallied around President Bush and the American people in our determination to fight terror. In the years since, the battle has been intensified, with understandable and honestly held differences about how best to do it. The interdependent world we live in is inherently unstable, full of opportunity and destruction. It will remain so, until we find our way from interdependence to a more integrated global community of shared responsibilities, shared benefits, and shared values. Building that kind of world and defeating terror cannot be done quickly. It will be the great challenge of the first half of the 21st century. I believe there are 5 things the United States should be doing to lead the way. First, fighting terror and the spread of weapons of mass destruction and improving our defenses to them. Second, making more friends and fewer terrorists, by helping the 50% of the world not reaping the benefits of globalization to overcome poverty, ignorance, disease, and bad government. Third, strengthening the institutions of global cooperation and working through them to promote security and prosperity and to combat our shared problems, from terror to AIDS to global warming. Fourth, continuing to make America a better model of how we want the world to work. And fifth, working to end the age-old compulsion to believe our differences are more important than our common humanity. I believe the world will continue its forward march from isolation to interdependence to cooperation, because there is no other choice. We have come a long way since our ancestors first stood up on the African savanna more than 100,000 years ago. In just the 15 years since the end of the Cold War, the West has been largely reconciled to its old adversaries, Russia and China. More than half the world's people are living under governments of their own choosing for the first time in history. There has been an unprecedented degree of global cooperation against terror, and a recognition that we must do more to fight poverty, disease, and global warming, and to get all the world's children in school. And America and many other free societies have shown that people of all races and religions can live together in mutual respect and harmony. Our nation will not be undone by terror. We will defeat it, but we must take care that in so doing, we do not compromise the character of our country or the future of our children. Our mission to form a more perfect union is now a global one. I'm still working on that list of life goals I made as a young man. Becoming a good person is a lifelong effort that requires letting go of anger at others and holding on to responsibility for the mistakes I've made. And it requires forgiveness. After all the forgiveness I've been given from Hillary, Chelsea, my friends, and millions of people in America and across the world, it's the least I can do. When I started going to black churches as a young politician, for the first time I heard people refer to funerals as homegoings. We're all going home, and I want to be ready. In the meantime, I take great joy in the life Chelsea is building, the superb job Hillary's doing in the Senate, and the work I'm doing through my foundation to bring economic, educational, and service opportunities to poor communities in America and across the world, to fight AIDS and bring low-cost medicine to those who need it, and to continue my commitment to racial and religious reconciliation. Do I have regrets? Sure, both private and public ones, and I've outlined them in this book. I'll leave it to others to judge how to balance the scales. I've just tried to tell the story of my joys and sorrows, dreams and fears, triumphs and failures. And I've tried to explain the difference between my view of the world and those on the far right with whom I did battle. In essence, they honestly believe they know the whole truth. I see things differently. I think St. Paul had it right when he said that in this life we see through a glass darkly and know in part. That's why he extolled the virtues of faith, hope, and love. I've had an improbable life, and a wonderful one, full of faith, hope, and love, as well as more than my share of grace and good fortune. As improbable as my life has been, it would have been impossible anywhere but America. Unlike so many people, I've been privileged to spend every day working for things I've believed in since I was a little boy hanging around my grandfather's store. I grew up with a fascinating mother who adored me, learned at the feet of great teachers, made a legion of loyal friends, built a loving life with the finest woman I've ever known, and had a child who continues to be the light of my life. As I said, I think it's a pretty good story, and I had a good time telling it. Bill Clinton, Westchester County, May 2004.
We hope you have enjoyed this production of My Life by Bill Clinton. This program was produced and directed by Jacob Bronstein and Dan Zitt. Abridgment by John McElroy. Music by Robert Kessler. Text copyright 2004 by William Jefferson Clinton. Production copyright 2004, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.